Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In my last sermon, I talked about Imam Ali and his vision of good governance, which is anchored on the idea of justice, tolerance, and human rights. Imam Ali did not borrow his ideas from philosophers and thinkers of the advanced civilizations of his time, from the Persian, the Greek, or the Roman civilizations of his time. Rather, he drew upon the teachings of the Holy Quran and the example of the Prophet Muhammad. After the sermon, Brother Farshid sent me a note and made a great observation, which I would like to share it with you. He said, and I quote, "As you pointed out correctly yesterday, Imam Ali promoted civility, tolerance, and understanding amongst his commanders and followers 14 centuries ago. One wonders how did we Muslims deteriorate and get to such a low threshold today?" This is a really good question. If we scan the Muslim population around the globe today, we will find ample evidence which validates Brother Farshid's observation. Let me give you just one example. Today we have an international entity called the Organization of Islamic Cooperation. This organization was founded in 1969 and consists of 57 member states. 53 of these countries are Muslim-majority nations with a collective population of about 1.8 billion people. Sadly, almost none of these countries get a passing grade for good governance. None of these countries, none of these 53 countries would get a passing grade when it comes to good governance. In fact, some of them, like the Islamic Republic of Iran, Saudi Arabia, and Egypt, are amongst the most repressive and corrupt governments on earth. The alternatives are not better either. ISIS, the Taliban, Boko Haram, Al-Shabaab, and Al-Qaeda are fighting to replace these ruling governments with one of their own. One can only imagine what sort of government we would get if these terrorist groups ever come to power and rule over their population. So, if Imam Ali's vision of social order is what Islam expects from Muslims, what went wrong in history? How come Muslims do not get their beliefs and inspirations from the Quran and Imam Ali? I'm sure most of you have grappled with this question, and inshallah, I will address this question today in my sermon. My talk will be a mixture of theology and political philosophy. And I will do my best to use a non-technical language so you can all follow my talk. So let's begin. After the Prophet Muhammad died, over a period of a couple of centuries, a number of factors came together to derail Islam from its original path. Perhaps the most decisive and the most consequential factor was power. The most decisive factor which derailed Islam from its original path was power. Despite the Quran's clear condemnation of aggressive wars, Muslim rulers waged war over other nations under the guise of inviting other people to Islam. Jihad, which is an important Quranic concept, was misappropriated as holy war. And I have talked about this issue extensively, even at ICCF. So jihad, which is an important Quranic concept and commandment, was misappropriated as holy war, so that the wars of conquest, which is forbidden by the Holy Quran, could somehow be justified and legitimized. In the post-Prophet era, the main project of Muslim rulers was empire building. The main project of Muslim rulers was empire building, plain and simple. This project ultimately led to the creation of the corrupt and ruthless dynasties of Umayyad and Abbasid. دستگاه خلافت اموی و عباسی از این طریق تولید شدند و برافراشته شدند در جهان اسلام. The newly formed Islamic empire was not without cost. And this is probably the crux of what I have to share with you today. The newly formed Islamic empire was not without cost. In the process, the religion of Islam became a casualty of the ill-guided empire-building project. Yes, Muslims accumulated vast fortunes, vast wealth, and came to rule over a large part of the world. However, the religion of Islam suffered greatly as a result. To better understand how the original Islam morphed into the religion that is today, we need to fully understand how power works in practice and how power arrangements corrupt religion. When the official custodians of religion or the clergy become part of the power system, this is very critical. This is very critical. When the clergy become part of the establishment, they have to bring something to the table to bargain with the other power brokers. What do the clergy bring to the table? Religion. And this will effectively make religion an instrument in the service of power and social control. And there is no exception to the rule I just mentioned. And by the way, I am not singling out Islam here today. My analysis equally applies to other world religions such as Christianity. In fact, before Islam, Christianity suffered greatly when the church became the main power broker in Europe during the Middle Ages. So now let me set up a framework for you to analyze how power works in practice. You see, power has many forms, but there are three primary forms of power: political power, economic and financial power, and knowledge and information power. Three primary forms of power: political power, economic power, and knowledge. In fact, it was Aristotle who correctly said, knowledge is power. Knowledge is power. In the modern secular society, the producers and gatekeepers of information and knowledge are scientists, philosophers, psychologists, psychiatrists, political experts, and the like. But in societies that are dominated by religion, the clergy fill this role. The clergy fill the position of the gatekeepers of knowledge, because they are the official guardians of sacred knowledge. They speak for God. They shape the message, the narrative, and the belief system for the masses. In every society, there is a ruling class, there is absolutely no exception. Every human society in the past, today, and in the future will have a ruling class. And this ruling class is composed of the political elite, the economic elite, and the information elite. These folks are the movers and shakers in society. They are the power brokers. Power has its inner logic. The nature operates on laws, right? Power is the same way. Power also operates on certain laws. In my opinion, there are three basic laws that guide power in every type of society. In agrarian societies, industrial societies, and also information societies. These three basic rules guide the operation of power. And you might call this the laws of power according to Hamid Entezam. I really believe that these three laws come together to shape power or shape the operation of power in every human society. What are those three laws? The first law, power has a natural tendency to concentrate. Whatever is touched by power craves to grow and grow. Whatever is touched by power would like to become bigger and bigger. That's how tyrants are made. That's how giant multinational corporations are created. See, 200 years ago, when we have a pretty much laissez-faire market economy, we didn't have corporations. But as time passed, those small little entrepreneurial entities grew and grew and grew to what is today these giant multinational corporations with billions of dollars in assets. So, essentially, power has a natural tendency to concentrate, and tyrants, giant corporations, so on and so forth, are born out of this very simple law. The second law of power. As Sir John Alton, the British historian and politician, said, power tends to corrupt, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. What is absolute power? It is concentrated power. So whenever in political dialogue you hear the term absolute power, it means concentrated power, when all the power, or most of it, is concentrated in one person, one institution, or one center. Now, concentrated power in all its forms, political, economic, and information, corrupts absolutely. It will corrupt with no exception. Tyranny, repression, inequality, poverty, ignorance, discrimination, these are all expressions of corruption, and they are all born out of concentrated power. The third law of power, which is really, really important for our discussion today, the political, economic, and information elite form an alliance, or what is called the ruling class. The power elite, which is composed of the political, economic, and information elite, collude. What does collusion mean? If you look it up in the dictionary, collusion means a secret understanding between two or more persons to gain something. You all probably have heard of the old saying, you scratch my back, I will scratch your back. That's exactly what happens when these power elite come together and collude. It is really astonishing how the Holy Quran exposes this sort of unholy alliance that shape human societies. The alliance that the Quran calls corruption on earth. This is the alliance that, according to the Holy Quran, creates corruption on earth. This is really fascinating. The Quran uses the story of Moses to illustrate this unholy alliance. And it's very relevant to our times. Moses was not only a messenger of God, a messenger who had to deliver the word of God, but he was also a leader with a social mission. What was the social mission of Moses? To liberate the people of Israel from bondage in Egypt. You're all familiar with this story in the Holy Quran. Moses was tasked by God to liberate the people of Israel from bondage in Egypt. What does bondage mean? The people of Israel did not have a say over their destiny. The people of Israel, Bani Israel, did not shape their own lives and livelihood. That bondage was the outcome of the unholy alliance of the political, economic, and information elite in Egypt. According to the Quran, three forces came together, three forces joined together to create that bondage. And these three forces collectively fought against Moses and his mission. What are those three forces, according to the Quran? The first one, Pharaoh. The Pharaoh was the political ruler, the tyrant. He was the public face of a corrupt system. But he didn't act alone. He wasn't alone. Who was the second person? Qarun. Qarun is the symbol of vast wealth. Qarun was the super rich of his times. This is how the Quran describes the wealth of Qarun. Please look it up in the Holy Quran, chapter 28, verse 76. So fascinating the way the Holy Quran puts the wealth of Qarun. وَآتَيْنَاهُ مِنَ الْكُنُوزِ مَا إِنَّا مَفَاتِحَهُ لَتَنُوءُ بِالْعُصْبَةِ أُولِي الْقُوَّةِ. We had given Qarun such treasures that even their keys would have weighed down a company of strong men. Can you imagine the magnitude of the wealth of Qarun? The Quran says even a company of strong men could not carry the keys to his treasure chests. So Qarun was the second force in Egypt who fought against Moses. And now the third player in this act, the third force that fought against Moses, the clergy, priests, and the sorcerers who were in the Pharaoh's court. The Quran is adamant that the Pharaoh was not an atheist. You see, most people think that because the Pharaoh fought against Moses, then the Pharaoh must have been an atheist. No, that's not the case. The Quran is adamant that the Pharaoh was a very religious man. Except his religion justified bondage. His religion justified repression. His religion sanctify tyranny and oppression. Exhibit number one, the Islamic Republic of Iran. Brothers and sisters, this is not just a story This is the predicament of the human race and human societies all throughout histories and today. The Quran also speaks of a learned man who opposed Moses. This man possessed knowledge of the Word of God. Chapter 7, verse 175. وَاتْلُ عَلَيْهِمْ نَبَأَ الَّذِي آتَيْنَاهُ آيَاتِنَا فَانْسَلَخَ مِنْهَا فَأَتَّبَعَهُ الشَّيْطَانُ فَكَانَ مِنَ الْغَاوِينَ O Prophet Muhammad, tell them the story of the man to whom we gave our messages. He threw them away, so Satan took him as his follower and he went astray. So the Quran tells us that there was a man in the time of Moses who knew the word of God, but he betrayed God. He went astray. Now the Quran doesn't name this person, but according to the commentators of the Holy Quran, he was Bal'am Ba'ur. Bal'am is the symbol of religious authority that betrays God. Let me repeat one more time. I'm talking about the third force that fought against Moses, the information elite, the knowledge elite. Not only there were priests and the sorcerers, but also somebody by the name Bal'am Ba'ur, who in the Quran is the symbol of religious authority that betrays God. The symbol of religious authority that twists the word of God. So, brothers and sisters, Fir'aun, Qarun, and Bal'am Ba'ur colluded. They acted together to create a system of bondage. My beloved teacher, the late Dr. Ali Shariati, beautifully describes how these three symbols of power seamlessly work together to create bondage for man. That's what Dr. Shariati says. فرعون سر مردی را به بند می کشیده است و بر گردش سوار می شده است. قارون جیبش را خالی می کرده است و بلعم باعور هم مأمور بوده است تا در گوشش به نرمی و مهربانی زمزمه کند و او را قانع کند که این وضع را تحمل کند و آن را خواست خدا بداند. فرعون rode on the man's back. قارون emptied the man's pockets, and Bal'am Ba'ur gently whispered in the man's ears, "My child, accept this predicament as the will of God." In other words, the clergyman would tell the victims of tyranny and exploitation, "Accept your bondage. Do not oppose the system. And God will reward you for your endurance with admission to heaven in the hereafter. Suffer here and be rewarded in the hereafter." That is the social mission of the clergy system. Now, we should not view Fir'aun, Qarun, and Bal'am Ba'ur as three individuals who lived in Egypt 3,000 years ago and then they died. No, don't think of it that way. In the Quranic usage, Fir'aun, Qarun, and Bal'am Ba'ur are personality types. They are personality types. They live in every era. They live in every single society. Fir'aun, Qarun, and Bal'am Ba'ur are three sides of a triangle. And this is according to my beloved teacher, Dr. Ali Shariati. Fir'aun, Qarun, and Bal'am Ba'ur form a triangle. مثلث زر و زور و تزویر، مثلث تیغ و طلاب و تسبیح، مثلث استبداد، استثمار و استهمار. This is what Dr. Shariati teaches us. The triangle of the sword, gold and deception. The triangle of the sword, gold, money and deception. The triangle of tyranny, exploitation and ignorance. It is this unholy triangle which creates tyranny and exploitation in human societies. In a nutshell, this is how power works in practice. Now let's use this framework that I just provided for you to examine our question. What went wrong in Islam? You see, without truly understanding how power works, we can't understand what went wrong in the history of Islam. How did power corrupt the religion of Islam? The power dynamics that I just discussed were also at play in early Islam. The Prophet Muhammad's and Imam Ali's vision of Islam stood for submission to God alone, not submission to political authority or to religious authority. Their vision of Islam stood for compassion, for taqwa, reason, and justice. Well, this vision did not sit well with the establishment in Arabia. The Meccan aristocracy, the slave owners, folks that embraced Islam only when Mecca was about to fall, they embraced Islam after years of fighting Islam with everything they had. The Meccan aristocracy, the slave owners, they fought against the Prophet Muhammad and the Muslim community economically and militarily. Folks like Abu Sufyan, whose grandson Yazid killed Imam Hussein in Karbala, embraced Islam not for faith, not for iman, but to preserve their wealth and power, this time under the banner of Islam. You've all heard of this age-old wisdom. If you can't beat them, join them. That's what happened in early Islam. The Meccan establishment, headed by the likes of Abu Sufyan, embraced Islam at the end when they realized that they could not win. Gradually, these folks closed ranks and came to dominate the Muslim communities. This is the sad irony of history. These folks who fought against the Prophet Muhammad, in a short order, came to dominate the Muslim community. In time, a new ruling class emerged in the Muslim society over time. This is how the Umayyad and Abbasid dynasties were shaped in the post-Prophet era. It was impossible for these corrupt dynasties to stay in power without religious justification, without having Islam on their side. Just like Fir'aun, these rulers had priests in their courts. The job of these priests, or the court Islamic experts, the clergy, was to create a caricature of Islam, a court narrative of Islam that justified injustice, that sanctified repression and plunder. It is in this pivotal period that thousands of hadith were forged. and hadiths are sayings attributed to the Prophet Muhammad. So it is in this period that thousands of hadiths were forged. Abu Hurairah is considered the most prolific narrator of hadith. He was actually a companion of Prophet Muhammad. Just like Bal'am Ba'ur, Abu Hurairah betrayed God and his faith. Abu Hurairah had knowledge of the sacred, but he could not resist the temptation of gold and money. Abu Hurairah was paid by Muawiyah, the son of Abu Sufyan and the founder of the Umayyad dynasty. So Abu Hurairah was paid by Muawiyah to do what? To forge hadith, to make up sayings and attribute them to the Prophet Muhammad. Over decades and centuries after the Prophet Muhammad, establishment clergy, establishment theologians, jurists, and narrators of hadith created a forged Islam. متکلمین، محدثین، فقیهان و مفتیان درباری یک اسلام جعلی ساختند. So much nonsense was loaded onto the simple religion of Islam. I guess this Farsi poem, which is addressed to the Prophet Muhammad, sums up the travesty. دین تو را در پی آرایشند، در پی آرایش و ویرایشند، بس که ببستند برو برگ و ساز، گر تو ببینی نشناسیش باز. O Prophet Muhammad, they are masquerading your religion. They loaded so much nonsense onto your religion that if you were to come back today, you would not be able to recognize Islam. And brothers and sisters, that is our predicament. In a nutshell, this is what happened to the original religion of Islam in history. And that's the religion of Islam that unfortunately most Muslims believe in today. I took the scenic route in my analysis here, but I hope it sheds some light on what went wrong in Islam after the Prophet Muhammad and why Islam today does not really look anything like what the Prophet Muhammad taught, what Imam Ali taught, and what the Holy Quran teaches. So, brothers and sisters, the Islam that is preached through the official channels in Iran, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Afghanistan, Pakistan, and beyond is very much a forgery. It was manufactured over centuries with the blessing and backing of the ruling classes in Muslim society. The clergy, both Shia and Sunni clergy, have propagated this forgery as Islam through the centuries. The forgery is simply mind-boggling. You will be shocked, brothers and sisters, if you compare the clergy's version of Islam with the Holy Quran and Imam Ali's teachings in the peak of eloquence, Nahjul Balagha. These two narratives of Islam are simply irreconcilable. The original Islam, as described in the Holy Quran and envisioned by Imam Ali, is rational and inclusive. It is liberating, not enslaving. It invites humanity to submit only to the one God alone, not to the self-appointed guardians of Islam or the clergy. Unfortunately, most Muslims today do not submit to God, but they submit to the Muslim clergy. The original Islam stands for human rights and social justice. It celebrates the diversity in humanity as the will of God, something to cherish, not to oppose. The original Islam aims to bring the people of all faiths together, not to pit them against each other. I think Rumi has captured the true meaning and message of Islam so eloquently in these verses in his masterpiece, Masnavi. تو برای وصل کردن آمدی، نه برای فصل کردن آمدی. Here Rumi is talking about the messengers of God. In the story of Moses and the shepherd, God teaches Moses a very important lesson. Moses, تو برای وصل کردن آمدی، نه برای فصل کردن آمدی. You have come to unite, not to sever. God's messengers wanted to bring people together through faith in God, not to sow division among people, not to spread name-calling. ما زبان را ننگریم و قال را، ما درون را بنگریم و حال را. God looks not at the tongues and the speech. He looks at the inward spirit and the state of feeling. آتشی از عشق در جان برفروز، سر به سر فکر و عبارت را بسوز. Light up a fire of love in your soul. Burn thought and expression entirely away. ملت عشق از همه دینها جداست، عاشقان را ملت و مذهب خداست. The religion of love is apart from all fake religions. The religion of love is apart from all fake religions. For lovers, the only religion and creed is God. I think Rumi beautifully captures some of the themes of the original Islam. That is the Islam that the Quran preaches, and that's the religion that the Prophet Muhammad, and for that matter, all the authentic messengers of God brought for humanity. And this authentic religion is not reconcilable with the clerical narrative that is oppressive, divisive, restrictive, and filled with superstitions. السلام علیکم و رحمت الله و برکاته.